sisters.
This is Alan Minsky, and the show is Building a Powerful Movement in the United States. We're going to start the show off in a couple minutes and hear from Bill Moyers. Bill Moyers spoke at the 40th Anniversary Gala for Public Citizen in Washington, D.C. a few days ago, and it's very interesting to hear his thoughts and enthusiasm for the Occupy movement. After that, we're going to be hearing from Andrea Barrara, who is a UC Berkeley graduate student, and we're going to hear her thoughts about Occupy Oakland and the participation of UC students in Occupy Oakland. After that, we'll go to Sean McDougall, who, like Andrea, is a Los Angeles expat living in the Bay Area. He was an activist down here in Southern California, an activist up in Oakland. And with both Andrea and Sean, we'll hear their reflections about the differences between organizing in the Bay Area and organizing in Los Angeles. After that, we'll hear from Naomi Klein. But first, Bill Moyers at the 40th Anniversary Gala of Public Citizen in Washington, D.C., just a couple days ago.
We invoke the strain in our national DNA that attests to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness as the produce of political equality. Yet private wealth multiplies even as public goods are beggared. And the property qualifications for federal office that the framers of the Constitution expressly feared as an unseemly veneration of wealth are now openly in force. And the common denominator of public office, including for our judges, is a common deference to cash. So, if belief in the dogma of democracy seems only skin deep, there are reasons for it. During the Great Prairie Revolt that swept the plains a century after the Constitution was ratified, the populist orator Mary Elizabeth Lease exclaimed, "Wall Street owns the country. Our laws are the output of a system which clothes rascals in robes and honesty in rags. The parties lie to us, and the political speakers mislead us because," she said, "money rules." That was 1890, and those agrarian populists were boiling over with anger that the corporations, banks, and government were conniving to deprive everyday people of their livelihood. They should see us now. John Boehner calls on the bankers, holds out his cup, and offers them total obeisance from the House majority if only they will fill it. That's now the norm, and they get away with it. Barack Obama criticizes bankers as fat cats, then invites them to dine at a pricey New York restaurant where the tasting menu runs to $195 a person. And that's the norm. And they get away with it. As we speak, the president has raised more money from banks, hedge funds, and private equity managers than any Republican candidate, including Mitt Romney. Let's name it for what it is: democratic deviancy defined downward. Politics today, and there are honorable men and women in it, but politics today is little more than money laundering in the trafficking of power and policy. Fewer than 6 degrees of separation from the spirit and tactics of Tony Soprano. Why New York's Zuccotti Park is occupied is no mystery. Reporters keep scratching their heads and asking, "Why are you here?" But it's as clear as the crash of 2008. They are occupying Wall Street because Wall Street has occupied America. I relish the sign. A woman was carrying at a fraternal march in Iowa the other day, one of those Occupy that have grown up around the country. It read, "I can't afford to buy a politician, so I bought this sign."
The words of Bill Moyers from Public Citizen's 40th anniversary gala just a few days ago in Washington, D.C. And now I'm joined by Andrea Barrera. Andrea Barrera is a student at UC Berkeley. She is a Los Angeles transplant, and I am talking to her just a few minutes ago. She is at the UC Berkeley campus. And Andrea, what is the spirit right now in the Bay Area on a day when there is a general strike called for in Oakland?
Well, I think that there's a lot of excitement and anticipation here, and I'm standing in front of Glenel Hall. It's one of the largest buildings on our campus, and students have just begun to walk out of their classes. We're converging on Sproul Plaza at 11 a.m., and I'm starting to see about 50 students walk out of just Glenel Hall.
And what's your sense of the awareness on UC Berkeley campus of the general strike in Oakland? Has it been among the general student body one of the main subjects of conversation these past few days?
I think that that students know about it. I actually, for the first time ever, have had students just randomly walk up to me and help flyer and outreach for building for today's general strike and walkout. And so that's never actually happened in the year that I've been organizing at Cal. And I think that people are really excited about this and are ready to take action and to do something to stand up against the banks.
And have you been directly involved yourself in the Occupy Oakland encampment?
Yes, I have. I've been staying at Occupy Oakland, if not like every week at, most weeks and weekends, when I'm not at school. And, Occupy Oakland has definitely been a place that's brought a lot of people from Berkeley and Oakland together, and has helped us make, greater connections across the K-12 and a higher education divide.
And I do want to ask you this, because I'm down here in Los Angeles, and from the perspective of someone in Los Angeles, there's a very large encampment down at City Hall, as you probably know, at Occupy Los Angeles. And yet it is Oakland that is really the first occupation that, in a sense, has moved the ball further down the field than Occupy Wall Street. All these other encampments may be en masse across the country. Collectively, they moved it down, but it seems like Oakland has moved it down further. You know Los Angeles well. Now you know the Bay Area. You've seen what's happened in Occupy Oakland. Any reflections or thoughts you might have about how to bring the sort of spirit of resistance to the economic order down to Los Angeles in the way that it's captivated Oakland?
Oh, well, I think that the history between Oakland and L.A. are two different histories that we have to look at. And I think that people in the Bay Area are very organized, and geographically we have different geographies, and so we have to take that into account and how the city of Los Angeles actually works to divide people more than bring them together, where I think the Bay Area has just a different kind of like collective feel to it. And so I think that the spirit of resistance is huge in LA, judging from all the people that I've spoken to. It's just really difficult to bring everyone together because of the geographic layout. With that being said, I think that people are angry and that like people in Los Angeles just have to stick it out and, go out to the communities and talk to people, which is what it's a lot easier to do that up here because the communities are just right down the street and we go there and ask people to come in and occupy and help out and come and talk to us. And people can and do that because it's on their way to and from, work, school, home, what have you, where that might not be the case in Los Angeles. So I think that the resistance is there. It's just how to tap into it is a really difficult question to figure out unless you totally replan LA City, maybe.
And I know you got to run because in a few minutes an event starts, when this is airing, in about 15 minutes, I believe you'll already be marching. So just quickly let the people know what you'll be doing starting at 11 a.m. and where are you headed with your march?
At 11 a.m., we'll be converging on Sproul Plaza. We're going to go ahead and have a small march around campus asking more students to walk out of their classrooms and join us. We will be leaving the campus around 11:15, 11:20, and marching straight down and picking up students at Berkeley Technical High, who's who will be also walking out, and we hope to be marching on businesses and banks that have not closed on the day on our way down there, just to show that we are not a force to be reckoned with. And so we expect a lot of exciting things to be happening, and hopefully by the time listeners are hearing this, we'll be well on our way down to the Oakland encampment.
Andrea Barrera, a student at UC Berkeley, a Los Angeles expat in the Bay Area, thank you so much for joining us here on Building a Powerful Movement in the United States.
Thank you so much. Good luck to everyone.
And this is Alan Minsky here at KPFK, and I'm joined now on the line by Sean McDougall. Sean McDougall is a Bay Area-based activist with roots in Southern California. Welcome to KPFK, or welcome back to KPFK, Sean.
Hey, Alan. Thanks. I'm glad to be here.
So what does it feel like to be in Oakland, California right now?
Oh, it's really exciting. It feels like one of the major sort of stepping stones in the long-term movement that we've all been waiting for. So it feels really good. Lots of people who were before relatively passive, relatively demoralized by the political climate are stepping up to the plate. Various unions, various workers, students are getting excited to take action and shift the public debate. So it feels good.
How long have you been active in the Occupy movement? I know from friends of mine who are friends of yours that you're dealing with something that's making it difficult for you to march these days.
I'm temporarily on crutches, but yeah, I've been active in the Occupy movement locally in terms of just helping out with different meetings and moderating stuff and proposing different actions and helping organize some stuff. But a lot of different people are, you know, that's one of the things that's really beautiful about this is there's so many ways in which people are plugging in, so many ways that people are helping build not only the camp, the standing sort of, you know, camp here at Astro Grant, Franco Gallo Plaza, but also just around the area in terms of outreaching to different communities and different constituencies and people bringing resources through and stuff like that. So it's really beautiful.
And I want to talk a little bit about the trajectory of Occupy Oakland because, you know, there's Occupy San Francisco, there's Occupy Berkeley, and Occupy Oakland, when I first heard about it, you know, the initial organizational meeting or the initial General Assembly was really sizable. And people I knew up in the Bay Area were very excited. It really was something that had great momentum. And my understanding is it was really drawing in a really broad slice of Oakland right from the beginning. Or do you think the criticism that has been the internal criticism inside the movement, that the movement has been heavily weighted towards, you know, people who come from more prosperous backgrounds, not from communities of color, was that evident in Occupy Oakland or was that not the case with Occupy Oakland?
I think that those kinds of criticisms were largely not based on people sort of on the ground sort of like interfacing with each other.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of assumptions that people had based on how people look or whatever. A couple of people I know who had such criticisms early on, actually after they came to Astro Grant Plaza and interacted with people and dialogued people, completely turned around and completely changed what they were saying. So I just think whenever you have a movement that's about the 99%, there's going to be all sorts of, 99% is from pretty much everybody, right? And so there's going to be all sorts of, you know, challenges, you know, building bridges across differences. But it's great to see the bridge building happening.
Well, it's certainly true that if you look at Occupy LA, which is down at City Hall, which is, you know, all these encampments are unique. It's a very, very sizable encampment. It's still in, you know, it's representing, and I'm sure you've probably been aware of this too, Sean, and I know our listeners are, there's Occupy Long Beach, there's Occupy Redlands, there's Occupy San Diego, there's Occupy Orange County, all throughout the Southern California megalopolis. There are many, many occupations, but Occupy LA is huge. And you know, when people think about Los Angeles around the world and in Southern California, they know that this is a incredibly diverse metropolitan area, but it's also one of the, you know, cultural centers of the world. Same true for the Bay Area, but
right.
Oakland has within the Bay Area a distinctly working class profile, as it were. And yeah. And I think it's really the first of the major occupations to garner headlines for which that is true. Is that spirit? That spirit seems to be very in evidence from Oakland.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think one of the things that's been wonderful is just there's been a sense of sort of strong sort of solidarity building across sort of a lot of differences that divide, you know, various elements within sort of the working class or working poor and non-working poor, you know, just the, you know, and so just people coming together and just helping each other at the camp, you know, seeing to each other's medical needs, you know, helping each other, you know, find resources that they need and stuff like that. I mean, a lot of that sort of community building, you know, beyond just sort of like the snapshot picture that you might have as sort of like an observer from the air, but just sort of like seeing the ways in which people are sort of like physically helping each other and physically interacting with each other and physically dialoguing with each other. That's the real transformation that's happening. And I think that that's beautiful. And I think it's going to be difficult, you know, because different people have different, you know, perspectives and stuff like that. But that's kind of like what we're called to do if we're talking about building a mass movement is to, you know, engage those differences. So, I mean, I think that, you know, no one owns the movement. Everyone has a different slice of the truth. And I think that people are learning to be a little more, I hope that people are being, and I know some people are, being a little more humble about how we talk about the movement. Because none of us understands the movement because there's so many different slices and angles and layers to it. At most, we can bring our piece of the puzzle together and hope that the different pieces of the puzzle together synthesize to create a larger whole bigger than any one of us. So I think that people are realizing that we have to be humble with respect to the mass movement because no one can speak for other communities. No one ultimately can speak for anyone but themselves, and people are learning that through the process of engaging each other in dialogue.
We're going to have, another special guest joining us in a moment from Oakland. But one final question here, Sean, which is that, and the guest, by the way, is going to be Boots Riley, lead singer of The Coup and Street Sweeper Social Club. And at least by one degree of separation, a great friend of KPFK is he's now, of course, in Street Sweeper Social Club with Tom Morello, who hosts Axis of Justice here. But one final question for you, Sean, and I asked this of another woman who's now a graduate student up at UC Berkeley who has roots in Southern California. Any thoughts about what you've learned in Occupy Oakland as Occupy Oakland has moved to sort of center stage in the global Occupy movement with a call, pushing the ball down the field, as it were, for a general strike? What do you think, any thoughts you could impart to the people in Southern California with your experience down here to, you know, get sort of the same kind of momentum going in working class communities, communities of color?
Two things. One is be bold. Right, be bold as groups of people collectively in terms of the calls we, the actions we make, but also be bold individually. One of the things that we did this Saturday was we did this thing called the Kittens Action. We got people out forming teams to go around the city to engage the public in dialogue, not only about the general strike, but about the Occupy movement in general. And people were really, a lot of people who are used to marching around with a sign or sort of speaking at people had the experience of actually speaking with the community. And that kind of like dialogue that happens, people were like, this needs to happen all the time. This needs to be multiplied if we're actually going to build a really sort of self-conscious mass movement. I think that that's happening here, and I encourage people in LA to be bold and build a movement based on dialogue with a broader community, not just people who already agree with us.
Well, Sean McDougall, it's such a pleasure to have you back on KPFK. Sean McDougall is an activist who is now in the Bay Area. I knew Sean from his great work as an activist down in Southern California. Have a great day, Sean, and enjoy the general strike in Oakland.
All right. Take care. Thanks. Bye.
Thank you so much. And now I'm joined by Boots Riley. Boots Riley is the legendary lead singer of the radical Bay Area band The Coup, and as well as being the lead singer of the band Street Sweepers Social Club with Tom Morello. Boots Riley, welcome to KPFK, and welcome to the revolution. How does it feel up in Oakland?
Thank you for having me. It's a little hard to hear. There's a lot of noise going on.
Describe what's going on around you right now.
A march that left after the 9 a.m. rally went down and shut down three banks, and it's back, and it's soaking in the glory right now.
So how do you feel about all of this happening in your community, and how you've thought it so you've been so eloquent in your writing and in your thinking about revolution in America. How does it feel now to be in an Oakland that seems to be captivated by that spirit?
Well, you know, I've always put forth that the population of the United States was actually way more to the left than even the left thought. That there was only a matter of semantics that's going on. That even in the red states, you know, just a couple generations ago, they were really red states. Utah, Montana, all those places were hotbeds of communist activity in the 30s.
Right.
And I think they talk about some of the same things. It's just the semantics are different. And in the 60s, people kind of took a different style in organizing on the left. And so we lost touch. And the populace is definitely more to the left than the media talks about. I think that most people have ideas that would be considered radical or left, but they modify them when they speak based on what they think everyone else thinks and based on what they think can actually happen. Right?
Right.
Most people a week and a half ago would have said there's no way a general strike would happen in the United States in the next 30 years.
Right.
Right? We did it in 6 days.
So what how large are the crowds you're in right now, and how shut down is Oakland?
Well, let's say this. Okay, there's a controversy over how shut down. We had only aimed to shut down the night shift just because that's when we'll get the biggest numbers.
Right.
Most of the workers of the ILWU did not show up for work today. Now, there's a controversy because it was announced by one of the ILWU folks as the port being shut down because you can't see any ships working. We're still trying to find out if that's actually true. I don't know whether the whole port is shut down right now, but definitely a large part of it is. Truckers are backed up for a couple miles right now because they cannot offload. They cannot get into the port because of how many workers did not show up.
And are you in downtown Oakland right now?
For the night shift, we are going to shut it down, specifically ourselves.
Right. There's a march right from Oscar Grant Plaza to the ports this late afternoon, early evening. And are you in downtown Oakland right now?
Yes, I'm right at 14th and Broadway.
And are many businesses shuttered today, or how does that look?
What did you say?
Are businesses closed, and how large is the crowd?
Everyone here, I'll put it like this. A lot of small businesses shut on their own.
Right.
Just knowing that just being in support. Physically, businesses are shut down around here. And as you know, we have the SEIU, Oakland Education Association, Laney College is just marching up right now, and the high schools are almost here.
Well, Boots Riley, have a great day today. Enjoy the general strike of Oakland in your hometown. I imagine for you it must be something like a dream come true, but as you say, you see the revolutionary spirit in the American people, and I have to concur. I think people want a just society in America, and they know it's gone off the rails. And I believe we've lost Boots there, but that was Boots Riley, the lead singer, legendary lead singer of The Coup, from the midst of the Oakland general strike. And right now what we're going to do is we're going to go to a clip of Naomi Klein talking about her reflections on Occupy Wall Street.
It just shows that you never can predict when people will reach their breaking point and when suddenly what you've been told was impossible will just seem inevitable. What's just so incredible is how often we're told that people don't care, that they're apathetic, that they're happy with the status quo. Particularly Americans, you know, we're always sort of underselling Americans about what they want, what they're capable of. There's just such an industry of of really underselling this country. And what's been amazing to see is just the hunger out there for connection, for decommodified space, for really radical ideas. And this is such a joyful space. It's such a joyful movement. People get addicted to it. I mean, this is the thing. There's no coercion. There's no sense of duty, like, oh, God, you know, I have to go to the march. I mean, it's the exact opposite. It's that people want to spend their Saturday nights here. They want to bring friends here. They want to come every day. That's what happened to me. I mean, I didn't plan to be here every day, but I've been here every day, and it's just heartbreaking to leave. And people are just getting a taste of another possible way of living, and that's so important in a culture where our biggest problem is not that we don't know the failures of capitalism, it's that we can't imagine another way. We can't imagine another system. This generation grew up being told that there is no alternative to capitalism, that this is all there is. And so when you taste another alternative, when you feel it, when you see it, when you experience it, it's life-changing, because you'll never believe again that there is no alternative. You know, nobody predicted this movement, so anybody who claims that they know where this is going is just lying. You know, this is already gotten so far beyond what the original organizers imagined. And, you know, what I hope is that this moment really turns into a sustained popular movement for social change with the institutions that are needed to go with that. And that means cultural, that means media, that means arts, it also means politics. It means having the ability to speak for itself. You know, my concern about this movement is that if it stays sort of just amorphous, then all of this energy here will just be used and channeled by people who may have much more reformist demands and who really aren't dreaming big. So, you know, I think it's fine for people who, you know, just want to raise taxes on the rich or just want to regulate the banks to use the momentum and energy of this moment to try to push through their demands. But I don't think that should be all this movement is. I think this movement should be able to make much more radical demands than that. But not even demands, be able to articulate another narrative for what society should be like, and have the ability to unleash a much more radical imagination for what this world can be. But it has to develop the democratic means to speak for itself in order for that to happen. You know, when people are trying to co-opt you, sometimes the reaction is to go in the totally opposite direction and just be like, you know, we don't have a structure, we don't have an ideology, and nobody can pin us down. I've been parts of movements that have made that decision, and I think that would be a mistake, and I also think that it doesn't live up to the moral responsibility of this moment. So many lives are on the line right now. This system is crashing. It's crashing economically and it's crashing ecologically. The stakes are too high for us not to make the absolute most of this moment.
And that is Naomi Klein from Occupy Wall Street.